And we are live on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. I am Chris Graham, joined by Rod Mullins, and we're going to talk NASCAR as NASCAR returned to the track on Sunday in Darlington. Kevin Harvick with the win in a spirited race that had some really good viewer numbers, certainly. And we're talking here just a little bit before the scheduled start of the second race of the last 4 days for NASCAR's Top Cup Series. Though I understand, Rod, that there are some weather issues down in Darlington that may push us back either later tonight or certainly into tomorrow. What's the latest on the weather and tonight's race?
Well, right now, right now, the way things are looking at Darlington, there's a lot of rain moving north, northeast. And the last time that I heard from the pool report from Jenna Fryer with the Associated Press and working with NASCAR right now, they said that the start time, if they are able to get this race going, will be about 6:26 Eastern time. But the way that the rain is coming down there, there is the possibility the race may be moved to Thursday, and that would be sometime after the Xfinity race on Thursday afternoon. So the weather has played havoc, and I guess it's all because of that tropical storm that moved through and hugged the coast right around through there, and it's been whipping a lot of moisture back around, and then here we are getting this moisture again. Matter of fact, I've got just dreary conditions where I'm at, so if it's dreary here, I'm sure it's very dreary down in Darlington, South Carolina right now. So we're looking at possibly a Thursday start.
I will say, now I don't know about track conditions in terms of what they have to do to dry the track after, but I've got my weather app up here. From my days in broadcasting, one weather app was recommended to us by the umpires we work with, Dark Sky. It's only $3.99 on your app store. We use it all the time. Baseball games particularly is very important. They don't play baseball if there's any kind of bad weather. What I see looks favorable. Again, that's just in terms of rain or whatever may be falling from the sky. The worst of the weather, when I run this through my app, is trending to move north north and west away from Darlington, more in your direction, Rod. So
okay.
You're in the middle of some bad stuff that I see. Just from a rain perspective, there could be a window, but then again, I don't know what the conditions of the track would be in terms of what they may need to do to drive. But we'll throw out there that yes, it could be. And the weather forecast for tomorrow certainly looks a lot better: 80 degrees and sunny in the afternoon. So, and whatever chance of rain is in the morning tomorrow. So if they do move to tomorrow, the race will go off tomorrow. They could go tonight, and that would be fun. Okay, so now let's talk about Sunday. It's past Sunday.
Okay.
There was a wreck on the first lap. I guess that was kind of maybe expected a little bit as the guys were getting out there for the first time. No practice, first time in a car in all those weeks. But then things settled down. Jimmy Johnson led for a while. He was about to win stage one, and then 200 feet from the start-finish line, he has a wreck and is knocked out of the race, but had a good run there for a while. Kevin Harvick eventually wins the race. Those are some of the highlights. Take us into it, Rod. How did things go from your perspective in Sunday's race?
From my perspective, it was a smooth operation. NASCAR, I think that the pool reporting from Jenna Fryer and company down at Darlington was great. They kept us informed at least what was going on. I had the opportunity to be able to watch from NASCAR itself through the NASCAR media site, of where I could see from different angles. I could see up above the track. I could also see their track side and see what was going on. But other than that, you didn't have any fans, so you have to be able to compliment and at least comment on this situation as to what was going on Sunday. I thought it ran smooth. Brad Keselowski came out with a couple of comments after the race, and he really gave a hats off to NASCAR over this of, the persistence, staying with this and being able to make this race a reality. And I'm glad it did. Like you were talking earlier about the ratings, they had some great ratings on this one. The ratings were the highest they'd been, I think, in quite a few years, and especially rival the Daytona 500 start, I think, of maybe about 10 million viewers. This time around, they had about 6.3 or 6.5 million, but still, that was a great start for at least something that we've not had in the last 10 weeks, 71 days. And, Kevin Harvick came out, and this is what's so wild about this whole thing. Kevin Harvick has picked up two major wins. I mean, he's already at 50 wins on this for his career, but he has picked up two major milestone wins in his career. The first was 3 weeks after the death of Dale Earnhardt Sr. at Daytona. He picked that race victory up at Atlanta. He picked up his second momentous victory at Darlington, that is 71 days from the COVID-19 pandemic declaration. And then all racing had stopped from that point in Atlanta. So it was kind of fitting that he's able to get that, and he's able to pick up that milestone right there and then tie him on that all-time winner's lead right now with 50 wins. He's about 14th or 15th in there with Ned Jarrett, I think, tied in there with Ned Jarrett. And so it was a big win for him. And the first thing he did say after he got out of the car, "We missed the fans." That was the one thing that he did point out. And that was great to at least hear the drivers say that, because the drivers know who fuels them when it's not, you know, when they're not in the car and everything, you know, they support them. But when they're at the track, they support them even greater. And, you know, he missed that opportunity, but he drove his heart out for the fans on Sunday afternoon.
So looking at what they learned on Sunday, of course, those teams did not get opportunity for practice laps, any kind of testing or anything like that. They just got in the cars and race around the track. The teams had to set their cars up without really any of that knowledge that they would glean from practice laps. I would presume that they have a lot more knowledge now since they're racing back at Darlington either tonight or tomorrow. Can we anticipate that the race will be a little even more smooth, I guess, tonight because both the drivers are more attuned to what they need to do and the teams are as well?
I think we will see a smoother race. If we race tonight, I think we'll see a smoother race. If we end up racing tomorrow, I think we'll see the same thing. I believe that they have shared a lot of this information also. If they haven't been watching on television, I think they've shared some of this information with the Xfinity teams in order for them to know. Here's the big thing that happened on Sunday that I had to learn for the first time. Okay, one, we had a competition caution that came out at lap 30, and that was just to make sure that everything was okay. Also a chance for you to be able to tighten or loosen the car up. You could get some tires if you needed to, or things like that, because Darlington's really rough on tires. But here's the thing that they did in the early going of the race, or before the race actually started, and that was to get a feel for what pit road was like and what speed they have to travel. 45 miles an hour at Darlington is the maximum speed that you can drive down pit road. And, you know, it's 55 in some of the other super speedways, but it's 45 at Darlington. And it is hard to judge what your speed is, especially running wide open at Darlington and you're having to come into the pits. So you're having to put on the brakes really quick, and you do not have a speedometer in your car whatsoever. You have to look at the tack. You have to be able to look at the RPMs, and also about the fact of, you know, where you stand and where the car kind of feels, so to speak. And they will also tell you, they'll be monitoring you from the pits itself, but NASCAR scoring also monitors you on speed as you're coming down through there. We had a couple of incidents where some people did do some speeding on pit road on Sunday. Chase Elliott, he got a penalty out of that, but he managed to overcome that and finish in the top 10, which was good for him. But, you know, there were some changes. There were some big changes with it. And most of these guys, they went with four tires and fuel on a lot of stops when they did have to make the stops. That's what they went with. And I would rather go with four tires and fuel as to just go with a little bit of fuel and two tires and not know what the situation was going to be toward the end of the race.
I got to throw a words of praise out for the broadcast team, Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon. You know, I was paying close attention. I guess that's one realm that I know a little bit about the broadcast side of things. They were broadcasting from Charlotte. They weren't there on scene. And so when they've told, and they told us early they were doing that. In fact, you know, before, as right. Sorry, they told us they were going to be broadcasting from there. I have watched some other broadcasts. I've the last couple of days, ESPN, I've had on in the background while working during the workday, ESPN's rebroadcast of Korean baseball. I mean, you know, I love baseball. Okay. I'm so starved for baseball. I need to see some baseball. And so during the workday, I've had some, the broadcast on, and those guys are also working. Of course, they're not in Korea. It's the American broadcast team. It's Carl Ravitch and the normal Sunday night guys that ESPN has during their baseball season. And they're working remotely as well. Not good. It's not good. And those are good guys. They're professional guys. Eduardo Lopez and that kind of – they're good. They're great guys. but they're off. You know, it seems like they're relying too much on the graphics. Things are behind. You know, their timing's off. Not the case with Mike Joly and Jeff Gordon. You know, if they hadn't told me, honestly, Rod, that they weren't in the same, they weren't in Darlington, they weren't normal, it wasn't normal at all, I wouldn't have noticed it. They were as spot on as if they were there, as if nothing was different. And in fact, to me, the whole broadcast felt that way, you know, and knowing that the broadcast teams are working with reduced numbers and they're working with all the restrictions that they would have, man, you know, except for the fact there were no fans in the stands, it was a normal Sunday in NASCAR, if you ask me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the other thing was you didn't have to have, you didn't have three or four people in the pits covering the action. Regan Smith was on his feet constantly, but he said that was a good thing for him to being able to go from pit to pit, but he didn't have the people down in the infield that restricts you from getting from one pit to another. Now, if you had that normally, during a race, oh my gosh, it is pandemonium down there in the pits when you're trying to either go and get to one pit, take a picture, or be able to do something of an interview. These guys, you have to understand, the TV people, they are carrying these flat screen monitors on a, like a monopod is what they're doing. And they also have this little small camera set up and they're going first thing. And they've got usually about two or three people. So you're having to carry two or three people down there with you at the same time. Not so this past Sunday with Regan Smith, because Regan Smith maybe did one or two camera shots from the infield, but the rest of the time he was doing audio was what he was doing. So that saved them some trouble there. But getting back to Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon, I think the iRacing thing helped them tremendously, I think, on kind of keeping their flow on this, so to speak. And you have to also see the studios that they have. I've never seen it personally. I've just seen photos of it. But the Steve Byrne NASCAR studios that they have in Charlotte there, they are absolutely phenomenal. They have monitors almost all over the place. And so Jeff Gordon and Mike Joy are sitting in front of these monitors, and they can get a perspective from all of the track cameras as they're laid out there. And you've got it just from a professional standpoint. Mike Joy is just, he's smooth. I used to at some time or another, I thought Mike Joy is a little bit too energetic for me, but he is just so smooth when he goes into his description of a race. And Jeff Gordon, you know, I know Jeff Gordon gets tongue-tied sometimes. We all do, but Jeff Gordon delivers some concise commentary on what's going on the racetrack, and also some things of what the crew chiefs are maybe thinking at that point. What are you going to do in this certain situation? I think it gave it a whole new perspective on Sunday.
They did this a couple times during a race, but the first time I noticed it, maybe 40, 50 laps, and it was after the that competition caution you talked about, Rod. It went, the announcers went silent. Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon went silent. For a second, I thought, uh-oh, they lost the audio. Something's going on here. Because it was maybe for 90 seconds, maybe even two full minutes, all you heard was that they had the cameras, you know, and they showed the cars driving by. You heard the sound of the speed. And then Mike Joy comes back and he said, "I've missed that sound." And then you realize that was intentional. "I've missed that sound." And I thought to myself, you know what? I did too. Sometimes less is more in broadcasting, I guess.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I will say this too, even though you're at a track and sometimes at Bristol, especially when Bristol is so compressed in and that small little, you know, half mile right there, that circle that you've got, the Coliseum as they regard it as, at Darlington on Sunday afternoon, I heard Jimmy Johnson's car crash for the first time. That's something that you don't normally hear. I heard sheet metal, or the carbon fiber base, as we'll call it, part of that body and then the front end of that car. I heard the metal hit. I heard everything, how it bent up. I heard that. And I was impressed with that. And I'm like, I really wish we could hear this all the time in a race. But, you know, in that case, you'd have to say, well, we don't want fans at any of the races. And that would kind of, you know, deprive the fans, so to speak, because it's very loud at the track. But, you know, even though you didn't have fans at the track and it was loud, Darlington's a little bit more spread out, though, than a Bristol. But you were able to hear that, and they had the microphone in a great place. And when that crumpled up metal sound and hit that inside retaining wall, I knew that, you know, things were over with for Jimmy Johnson that day. I mean, it was just, there's just no other way you could describe that sound.
So, Ron, you mentioned Bristol just in passing there as you were talking. When we talked last week, we didn't have this news. I did a podcast, a Facebook Live the next day. We already had the news about NASCAR scheduling future dates. Now, we knew that Darlington was coming up again tonight or tomorrow, as the case may be now weather-wise. Charlotte has the next couple. Hey, Bristol and Martinsville, among others, on the schedule for the next few weeks. So racing will be coming back to our neck of the woods. Talk about that and any other news regarding scheduling that has come up in the last few days.
Well, you know, like you mentioned, Bristol is going to be on May 31st, I think is the way they're scheduling it now. Most of these races that they have scheduled, of course, the Darlington, the Charlotte, the Bristol, the Martinsville, all of these are scheduled within a couple of hours or maybe 3 hours of the shop's headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina. Most of the teams have bases there in Charlotte. So this is a close shot for them to be able to accomplish this. Martinsville is going to take place at a little bit of a later date, so to speak, because I think what they're doing is they're kind of waiting, so to speak, for all of the, I guess, phase three part of Governor Northam's thing to kind of fully go away by that time, or at least be partially pulled back enough to where Martinsville will be able to benefit. Hey, it's going to benefit Bristol, especially come May 31st, because he has relinquished back some of the eateries and places along State Street. That's been a major story on CNN. Of here you have a town, Bristol, Tennessee, and Bristol, Virginia, divided by, you know, a street right down the middle, and you can do things on the Tennessee side, but you couldn't do things on the Virginia side. Now that's kind of come back a little bit more, and the business is starting to come back. So I think it'll be good for Bristol, especially in the upcoming weeks, and even better, hopefully, for Martinsville, because Martinsville needs a race like this. Now, the only other thing that I've heard right now, there is a rumor that Richmond might not be on the schedule. They may not try to make up that Richmond race that they had planned on doing because of the just the logistics of it, how far it is out. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, this is a work in progress how this is going.
Oh, I can give an update on that. Richmond Raceway sent out a note probably early last week. They're looking forward to their second race. Let's put the positive spin that way. They're looking forward to their second race in the fall, which I believe is the second playoff race, at least as far as the schedule goes. Yeah, Richmond Raceway has already kind of given up on that first race being rescheduled. But for the standpoint of Martinsville and Bristol being back on the schedule here, for our Virginia base here, it's good news to hear. For those out there, especially NASCAR fans who live outside of Virginia, just like I guess a lot of places in America, Virginia is in a phased reopening. We're still in our phase one. June 10th, which is when Martinsville is on the schedule now, would be in the heart of phase two, likely. There would be opportunity for restaurants to be open and things of that nature. Right. Phase three seems to me, and I don't think we're going to get quite to phase three by June 10th here in Virginia. I mean, that would be aggressive if we got that far. Mm-hmm. Our phase three, though, does include things being wide open. And so that's more likely later in June. That's probably another reason that Richmond is just waiting until its fall race. If we can keep on the path we are now, there could be fans in the stands in Richmond in September. So, That's the goal, I would say, for lots of folks, definitely.
Yeah, and I'll say this, too. I take this as a distinct possibility, too. I heard something right before we came to air to do the podcast. The governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, has proposed an idea to send students back to school in the fall with masks on. Now, I know that's going to be weird for some people, but I think we're going to have to just adapt and adjust to this new norm, considering, you know, Darlington full of masks this past weekend. That's what it was. We'll see that at Charlotte. We'll probably see that for the rest of the season. And there'll be people that'll feel a little bit comfortable maybe out of the gate, but the peer pressure, so to speak, of everybody wearing those masks, I think that's going to be in place. Lamar Alexander, who's the senator from Tennessee, he made that point the other day in some of those remote hearings that they were doing. He thought that the masks were going to be the new standard, or at least the new norm for a lot of people. And I kind of agree with that. I think it's going to be, and there may be some problems along the line with it, but to ensure the safety of the drivers, the fans, and everybody in between, I think you're going to have it.
Well, I'll put it this way. If even all it is kind of like your security blanket, you know, from when you were a kid and you know, you need your little blankie to make you feel better.
Right.
If that's all it is, it's something. I mean, you know, if it's what's required to get things open back up, I'll put a mask on, you know, I'm a wrestling fan. People wear masks in wrestling all the time. I'll be a luchador if I have to be, to get things open again. And I think a lot of folks are moving in that direction. Certainly, from a mental standpoint, if you have to choose, open or closed, open, including mask, closed, no mask. If I can sit at home by myself, unemployed with no mask on, that's one thing.
Right.
If we can go back to some sense of normalcy, and it requires some of those kind of things, that'll be fine. And boy, it could mean that, you know, we could certainly see a lot more things opening up a lot quicker, and that might be the case. So I remember this, Rod, when this was starting up, someone found a historical photo. I think it was a 1918 or early 1919 baseball game with players wearing the face mask, the mask. So that's how sports continued back and through the Spanish flu. And so certainly if that's what it takes for a few months until we can get to a vaccine or a treatment, so we get some normalcy. I'll tell you what, I loved seeing NASCAR out this weekend. I'm not even a big soccer fan. I turned some soccer on though. The German league was playing this weekend. I just wanted to see something where I'm watching Korean baseball. We want to see all this stuff. So NASCAR, with all the recognizable faces, names, the brand names, the sport that we have, it's been great to see it back. And, it felt normal. Sunday felt like a normal day for the first time, and I can't tell you how long.
Now, I think once we got past maybe the first couple of laps, it felt normal again is what it felt like. We were just trying to kind of get the feel of what the race was going to be like. Talking about German soccer, for example, I ran into a friend of mine out in Wise here probably not more than about an hour ago. And he was talking to me and he said, oh, I've been, you know, been following your coverage and everything on Augusta Free Press and following the things about the NASCAR, about racing and everything. He said, have you watched any German soccer lately? And I said, no. And he's actually the soccer coach at the local high school. He said, no fans at the German soccer games. But he said, there's one thing that is distinct that you can hear while the game is going on. He said the swearing is unbelievable. He could not believe all the swearing that was going on. And I thought, yeah, this is part of it. I mean, this is a part of what I guess we're going to have to get used to. For a lot of people, I guess, you know, the German swearing is not going to be too bad. But when you're a language teacher like he is, especially French and German on some of those, you're picking up on some of those curse words before it's over with.
You know, I'm someone who, when I cover basketball particularly, you sit courtside. I was at the ACC tournament, right before everything shut down, covering the ACC tournament from courtside. And yes, it is different when you can hear everything being said. There are players blocking shots and they're cursing each other and they're it's the coaches are cursing the refs and everything is going, it's just so loud there. But what happens is you don't hear that because there's 20,000 people there. So I hear it because I'm sitting on the court. But you don't hear that sitting in the stands or certainly on TV. Mm-hmm. And but just like you heard the crash, you know, I remember hearing when you talked about the Jimmy Johnson crash, I think there was another crash that you could hear really loud in the ears. You could hear the brakes being applied. And
right.
You know, even in slow motion, when they played it back, slow motion brakes. I mean, you're hearing things you're never probably going to hear again after this is all over. So it'll open your eyes up into, you know, how loud things are, what goes on that you don't know. We're going to learn some things out of this the next few months, probably, that we maybe, whether we want to learn them or not, we're going to learn them.
That's true. You're right about it. And I think we'll learn even more this coming weekend at Charlotte when the circuit moves up to Charlotte and runs the 600. See, they're not doing any qualifying these two races at Darlington. They're going by the pool. You go in. The race field is inverted this time around from how it finished on Sunday. So you've got some different kind of people that's going to be sitting on the front row at least this time around. By the time they get to Charlotte for the weekend and they run the 600, they will be qualifying. They will be doing some qualifying on Sunday. So that'll at least be giving us some semblance of at least back to normal, at least in that case. And one other thing that I want to point out too that I think is going to be really neat, even though the fans are not going to be at Charlotte, even though you're not going to have probably such a large military presence as you've had before in the past, Charlotte still manages to find a way to be able to go and really treat the fans to the way things are going to be. And that is the salutes, what they're going to be doing this coming weekend. And I don't know if you've caught it on Facebook, on my Facebook feed or anything, but I'm really pleased that there's going to be a local family from where I'm from, that their father, these three boys, their father is going to be recognized on Joey Logano's race car coming up on Sunday at the Coca-Cola 600. And all because young Landon Hickman went and wrote a letter to Joey Logano and Joey Logano's team and told him what a, you know, big fan he was. And I've been sitting on this really since the Daytona 500. I knew something was going to materialize, and I was talking with Landon's mother about it, and she was kind of asking me, she said, you know, what all are they going to do and everything else? And I said, well, you know, they'll bring you all in the pits is probably what they'll do. They'll have you there in the pits, and they'll have you guys, you know, dressed out in either Army shirts or something from Charlotte is what they'll have. But they'll have you there as VIPs. And then, of course, all this COVID-19 stuff happened. But it's still the thought that counts. And so, you know, his name is going to be carried on Joey Logano's car on Sunday, as well as some of the other servicemen that have been killed in Afghanistan, also in Iraq, and also other wars. They'll be honored as well at Charlotte this coming weekend on Sunday.
That's a nice story. Thanks for telling that story. And so I just looked to give one last update as we're getting close to 6 o'clock on the East Coast here. I'm still hopeful, Rod. I'm still hopeful okay. that they may have good weather. We'll just, you know, we'll test my app here and whether or not how good it is. It's good for baseball. We'll see how it goes for that. But if it's not tonight, it'll be tomorrow. And then we have, of course, have Sunday with the Coca-Cola 600. And Rod, we look forward to your coverage. And then we'll have you back here next week and we'll talk about it all.
All right. Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.
And for our viewers and listeners out there, everyone have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk to you again soon.